Blog Talk Radio.
So I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left.
What it do, bitches?
On an island by myself,
what it do, what it do?
How's everybody doing today? A lot of stuff to get to. Trump is going nuts. The Democratic Party is officially 100% off the rails, totally and utterly lost in the weeds. They have no clue what lessons to take away from the last election. And so as a result of that, we're going to go ahead and take them to the woodshed. I always thought that was a weird phrase. I still don't get it. What does that mean, take him to the woodshed? I mean, I know, like, what it means today, but what was the original meaning? So we're going to talk about all that, and then later on in the show, you're going to see a common theme throughout today's show, which is Republicans desperately searching for their safe space. Again, I find the consistent attacks on the left on that front, like, oh, you snowflake, social justice warrior bitches. The right apparently is just incapable of self-analysis, because if they were to do that and be honest about it, they'd find out very quickly that they embody all of the characteristics of the social justice warriors that they say that they're against. They're just a right-wing version of those social justice warrior snowflakes. All right, so without further ado, let's go ahead and get started here. And we're going to do that with the DNC, who picked their new weekend over the leader, and it is absolutely, positively, 100% pathetic. Here we go. So the DNC picked their new leader over the weekend, and the result was both predictable and pathetic. So to sum it up, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Tom Perez won. He was the choice of the establishment. Obama supported him. Hillary Clinton wanted him. He won with 235 votes in the second ballot, which basically means that Keith Ellison, who was Bernie's choice, made it a close race and, you know, was right there with him in the first ballot. So Tom Perez was Obama's labor secretary. And probably the two most important facts about him, he supported Hillary over Bernie vociferously and ferociously early on in the primary process. You know, make of that what you will. You would think that the DNC would say, the Hillary Clinton version and flavor of Democratic politics didn't work, so maybe we try something new to stop Trump, because again, it's been proven that that establishment corporate brand of Democratic politics is a disaster. But no, they still went in that direction either way. So he was Obama's labor secretary, he supported Hillary over Bernie, and he was pro-TPP. So now we have the leader of the DNC is now a complete and utter embodiment. He is the quintessential version of a corporate Democrat. Now, don't get me wrong, when he was Obama's labor secretary, so one of the things that he did that I absolutely loved was he changed the overtime rules. He was largely responsible for drafting that. It's not legislation, but the proposal, which changed the overtime rules. So instead of people making like $23,000 a year and less getting overtime by law, they doubled it. So it was about, you know, $45,000 or so a year. If you make that or less, then you get overtime by law. That's since been, you know, held up in the courts and everything, but so that was one of the good things that he did. But here's how I view it, and I think the last election that really proves that this should be the mentality and the mold that the entire Democratic Party takes. TPP is strike one, you're out. There's no two and three. I mean, that's a deal breaker. You can't say, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive, I care about working people, and oh yeah, by the way, let's embrace this outsourcing bill, which would ruin their factory towns, drive wages down further, exploit slave labor in Malaysia, you know, allow in Brunei, who officially has Sharia law as part of the trade deal. I mean, it's just, it's unconscionable that this is something that's still debatable. And again, this is going to lead to more crazy Republican victories. Even all of their, with all of their backwardness, in Trump, what you had is somebody who knew how to be a fake straight shooter and say, oh yeah, I'm for the people. But he actually sold it better than Hillary was able to sell it, because Hillary's record was so crystal clear on trade. NAFTA, you know, she supported NAFTA. TPP, she pushed for 45 times before she tepidly came out against it because Bernie pushed her to be against it. She called it the gold standard of trade deals. So this is why you had the Rust Belt, which was formerly a Democratic stronghold. It flipped and it went Republican. And, you know, Hillary and the Democrats were so arrogant, she didn't even step foot in Wisconsin. She didn't campaign in a bunch of those states because she thought, we got it on lock. But Trump was hitting, you know, outsourcing every goddamn speech, and Hillary barely brought it up, and she didn't bring it up because everybody knows that she's actually for it. So, but now you have Tom Perez leading the DNC, and this is a guy who's going to do the same goddamn thing. This is the same kind of mindset that he has. He worships the corporations. Now, we also discussed a story recently. He ran away from a tough question on Israel. Why? Because some of the big money donors to the Democratic Party are Israeli billionaires. So, you know, he doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to say, he was asked if he opposes the demolition of innocent Palestinians' homes. And he didn't answer. He ran away. He ran away from that. Who does that? The person who does that is bought. And this is the moral courage or lack thereof of Tom Perez. So, by the way, along with Tom Perez winning, get this, the DNC voted to keep taking corporate money. There was a quote on Twitter from somebody, like, they debate this internally, and they were, you know, they voted on it, and apparently one of the Democrats said, I trust the Democrats to only take money from good corporations. Come again? Only take money from good corporations. They're unbelievable, man. They think they can play the game of taking corporate money and win and also keep credibility with the base. Again, that's one of those things where when the base hears that you're taking corporate money, they're not interested in you because they know that you're really, when push comes to shove, going to serve the corporations because that's human nature. They give you way more money, so okay, let me listen to them over everybody else, including my constituents. That you're not fooling the base anymore. And by the way, if you buy into that framework, what's going to happen? You're never going to outraise the Republicans with corporate money because they don't even pretend to want to be against it. You know, you have virtually all the Republicans. They go to Wall Street with their dick in one hand and their hand out asking for money in the other. So they don't care. I mean, they're proudly dismantling Dodd-Frank right now. So if you buy into that framework and that system that says corporate money is the way to go, well, then they're always going to outraise you. So not only is it dumb on principle because you're selling out your base, it's also dumb practically speaking because that's a mold that's never going to work for you. So you have to say no corporate money and no big donor money. That's the only way. That's the only way. Now, you know who's doing that? Justice Democrats. So this is the answer, guys. When I was watching this result, and it was massively depressing, I realized that this isn't cause or reason for Justice Democrats to put our tail between our legs and go home crying. This just means we have to fight harder because the establishment Democrats, the corporatists, still haven't gotten the message. And the message is no corporate money, no big donor money, and you have to stand for actual progressive values and policies. You have to fight for single payer. You have to fight for a living wage. You have to fight for universal college. You have to fight for no nation building. This has to be front and center. This has to be what your message is about, but it's not. What they do, what the corporate Democrats do, is they take something like diversity, for example, and they do kabuki theater. Oh, we are pro-diversity. Isn't it great to have people from different backgrounds and races and religions and culture? And, oh, yes, I am going to fight for you. And then they turn around, and all they do is serve the corporations. So they're doing what I call McLiberalism, which is, you know, you pretend like, oh, yeah, I'm on your side, and then all you do is serve Wall Street and serve the corporations. Well, we're here to actually fight for progressive values, to actually fight for the right things, fight for the American people. And by the way, we've been massively successful to this point, but we still need you because obviously the Democratic Party is still run by the corporatists. The DNC appointed people for their anti-Trump war room who were the people from Hillary's campaign who just lost to Trump. That's the craziest thing I've ever fucking heard in my life. They just lost to Trump, and the DNC goes, great, we want you to be the ones who are in charge of the framing to fight back against Trump. Well, then you're going to lose again. And by the same token, you put Tom Perez in there, a corporate bitch boy, you're going to lose again because the base isn't buying it anymore. So Justice Democrats, we've teamed up with, and we're working in conjunction with Brand New Congress. Now, Brand New Congress is similar to what Justice Democrats is doing, except they're nonpartisan. So what that means is they basically have one rule: no corporate money, no big donor money, and we're going to have politicians that represent the people. But they're not just doing it for Democrats; they're also doing it for Republicans, because it turns out that even the Republican base goes, "Yeah, I don't want big money controlling our politics. Yeah, I don't want the George Soros to be able to contribute to politicians and get what he wants." So they're also against big money in politics. The Republican base is. So Brand New Congress is saying, well, let's be nonpartisan and just run people to get a non-corrupt Congress. So even if you and I don't agree on the specific policies, at least we know the person is a genuine actor and he's not just serving the donors. So Brand New Congress does that. Everybody already knows. You guys know Justice Democrats is within the Democratic Party. It's the hostile takeover by the Bernie wing with principled people who take no corporate money and no big donor money. So we've teamed up. And listen to these results, man. I got to give you these new numbers because it's incredible. We have about 170,000 supporters between us. We have 7,900 nominations, of which 70 people have made it past four rounds of vetting and are training as candidates right now as we speak. So 7,900 people, rigorous vetting process, system they have to get through, and then at the end of it, they pick the best candidates, and we run them. And we primary the shit out of all the corporatists. That's the idea behind this. And by the way, listen to this. So far, nearly $1 million. We're not there yet, but we're getting close. Between Brand New Congress and Justice Democrats, nearly $1 million raised in small money donations. So that's regular people. That's working people. And they contribute to us, because we've made crystal clear we don't want big money, we're not going to represent the corporations, so people know. This is a movement I got to get behind, because guess what? People represent their donors. Who are our donors? Regular people. Regular people who, when it comes to Justice Dems, for example, you read our platform, you see exactly what we stand for, man. You know, it's crystal clear. It's laid out there in quite a bit of detail, and you can see that we are fighting for the things. And on the overwhelming majority of those things, the American people agree. The American people are just simply left-wing when you go issue for issue and you show them the policies. So you see what we're fighting for. You see we're serious because we're taking no big donor money and corporate money. And so people flock to that, man, and they're right to. And by the way, the establishment press, there were murmurs here and there, and there were, you know, some politicians who were like, okay, I see what's happening here, and this isn't good. But largely, the strategy they've taken has been see no evil, hear no evil. Let me look away and act like I don't know what's happening here, because if they do that, they think the problem might go away. And it is a problem for them. It's a problem that you have principled people who are not corrupt coming up to primary them. They think, oh, I hope this goes away. I hope my corporate money can you know, crush it under my boot and get away with it. Well, the answer is hell no. That's not going to happen. So what I need you to do is go to justicedemocrats.com, and this is all the more reason to sign up. I mean, look, the Democratic Party still hasn't learned their goddamn lesson. Tom Perez is now the leader of the DNC. A Hillary-supporting, TPP-loving, Israel-question-dodging son of a bitch is now the leader of the DNC. So we need you to go sign up. Put your name in support of it. If you can, donate $27, just like you did for Bernie Sanders' campaign. Nominate somebody you know to run. We got to get this done. We got to keep fighting, because we can't lay down anymore. If not us, who? If not now, when? We know that we have to do these things, and we have to do them ASAP, because we can't wait that much longer with orange fascist buffoon in there. You know, we got to fight back, and we got to have a strong Democratic Party. If we run fucking Cory Booker or Tim Kaine against Donald Trump in 2020, it's probably likely that Donald Trump, despite all of his fuck-ups, will have a second term. I don't want that. You don't want that. None of us should want that. So go to JusticeDemocrats.com right now. Let's show them that we're serious, and let's have a bunch of wins in 2018. And remember, this isn't just us doing it. It's you. This movement is all about you. So you need to lead it. You need to run. Get involved. JusticeDemocrats.com, because I can't take this nonsense anymore. Okay, next. Take a quick little sip of my drink. The New York Times is reporting that Trump is about to go nuts with military spending. They say President Trump will instruct federal agencies on Monday to assemble a budget for the coming fiscal year that includes sharp increases in Defense Department spending and drastic enough cuts to domestic agencies that he can keep his promise to leave Social Security and Medicare alone. Okay, so the only good news out of that is apparently he's actually trying to keep Social Security and Medicare as is. Now, he's appointed people at the Social Security Administration that are people of concern because they're across the board for privatization. So his picks have been a disaster, but apparently the news is behind the scenes from four different top administration officials that he's trying to leave those alone and actually stick by that promise. But he at the same time wants to sharply increase, that's their word, not mine, sharply increase defense spending, which in our case, let's be honest, is just offense spending. And in order to do that, virtually every other program, every domestic program, you got to cut it to the bone, man. So all the spending for the agencies, anti-poverty programs, you name it. EPA, of course, is on the chopping block. At first, we thought the trick he was going to do was the old Republican trick. Okay, put Scott Pruitt as the head of the EPA, who doesn't believe in the EPA, and he sued them 14 times. Turns out, no, he's not just doing the trick where you appoint somebody who doesn't believe in the agency. He's also just flat out going to cut it, just going to cut the budget to the bone. And watch, he'll do the same thing with all these anti-poverty programs. Another article that was out the other day was Betsy DeVos when it comes to the free lunch program for schools, cutting that massively. By the way, think about that. What kind of person says, oh, free and reduced lunch programs for poor people? Yeah, that's a priority to cut. That's like the last thing I would ever cut. Food for poor kids who need the, you know, either the free or the reduced cost lunch. I mean, these people are sick, man. They really are. So let's go ahead and take a look at this chart here, because this chart shows you what world military spending is like right now. So you have the U.S. spend 36% of all military spending worldwide. Think about that number. Sweet Jesus, that's almost half. 36% of all military spending in the world is the United States. The closest one to us is China with 13%. I mean, even if they doubled what they spend, it still wouldn't match us. Isn't that crazy? And then you have Saudi Arabia with 5.2%. By the way, we totally fund and prop up them. So, you know, that's basically, you could just put that on the U.S. Taxpayers' bill, because we're the ones who are paying for it. Russia, big bad Russia, only 4% of worldwide military spending. The U.K., 3.3%. India, 3.1%. And you go down the list there. It gets more and more obscure as you go down the list there in terms of the percentage of the spending. I mean, you know, guys, this is just, I mean, we've discussed it before. We've showed the other charts. When you look at discretionary spending, the United States, it's over 50% of our discretionary budget goes to the military. So our welfare in this country is warfare. And what we do is, it's actually brilliant by the elite and the military-industrial complex in the strategy they use. It's very clever. What they did is they set up shop in all 50 states. So there's something made for the military in every single state, whether it's, you know, the bulletproof vests in one state, or it's helicopters in another state, or it's fighter jets in another, the weapons in another, the ammunition in another. And what happens is it's all tied to jobs programs. So you have the politicians taking money from the defense contractors. Then, of course, the politicians turn around and do favors for the people who just gave them the money. And the favor is, okay, you get a contract to build more tanks, for example. And it gets to the point where they keep building tanks, and we simply don't need tanks anymore. In the Nevada desert, there's tanks just sitting there collecting dust. Because it's not about, they're not creating it based on need. It's a vital part of the economy. Military spending, again, our warfare spending is our welfare in this country. So many jobs are tied to it that there would actually be an uproar if we were to cut the military spending, for example, in half, which would still make us, you know, the biggest spender by far. But there would be an outcry because a lot of people would lose their jobs. So we have to move away. This is what the military-industrial complex is. You make war a business. You make it very profitable. And then you have a surplus of all these weapons and stuff sitting around, and then therein lies the other aspect of it. Then we sell it. We turn around and sell it to Egypt, who uses the weapons to crack down on peaceful protesters. We use it to sell to Israel, and we give to Israel because, of course, we give them $38 billion over the next 10 years, most of that military spending, military aid. And what they do is they use it to continue occupation and apartheid. And, of course, Netanyahu does his bomb fest in Gaza every few years where he cuts the grass and kills massive numbers of civilians. We give it to Saudi Arabia, who's slaughtering civilians in Yemen right now. So this is what we do. We fund worldwide conflicts. We, of course, engage ourselves in crazy conflicts. We're involved in seven different nations, doing seven different interventions right now, two different full-scale wars. And as all this goes on, the politicians gleefully, even under the Democrats, the trick is under the Democrats, you keep it as is. You don't dismantle the empire, but you talk like, oh, yes, we need to do something about this out-of-control military spending and war situation. And then you just coast. You keep it about the same. Maybe the tiniest little cuts. And then the Republicans come in, like Trump, and he goes, oh, let's sharply increase that. So under Democrats, you keep it the same. Under Republicans, you increase it, which means what? In the long term, all you're going to see is steady increases in military spending, even though we already spend 36% of the world military budget, and we spend over 50% of our own discretionary budget on it, all that while we don't get clean water in Flint, Michigan, and our infrastructure gets a grade of D, according to the Society of Civil Engineers. It's sick, man. We need a drastic realignment of our priorities. Yes, you have to get rid of those military jobs and give those people other jobs. We have an entire economic boom just waiting for us on the renewable energy front. We could do a new deal where we rebuild all of our infrastructure. The idea that, you know, you can't replace these shitty jobs. If I paid you every day to go to my front lawn and cut the grass with toenail clippers, you'd say, ah, well, look, I'm getting paid. I need this job because it's the money. But you're doing a job that's effectively useless. Well, same thing. If you're building, weapons of death, well, that's not only is that useless, it's actually worse than that because it's immoral and unethical because the weapons are being used to kill innocent people all over the world and we're fueling conflicts and we're fueling genocidal maniacs in some circumstances. So that's not a good job. We can get rid of that and give you a different job, a job that actually makes sense. Just like with the cutting my grass with toenail clippers. It's not intelligent. It might be as it is right now. It might be the current state of affairs. But we got to switch it up. We got to change it. We can't sit around anymore. And, of course, Trump has decided to face the car in the wrong direction and put the pedal to the metal as he pretends like he's for the people. It's a sick joke, man, and everybody should speak up against it. But no, I warned you guys from the beginning, and now it's coming through and it's happening. But I told you that you're going to have the neocons and you're going to have the establishment Republicans. Eventually, they're all going to come around and say, you know what, I like Trump. Why? Because of shit like this. This is exactly what Mitt Romney would do. This is exactly what John McCain would do. This is exactly what Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or any of the establishment Republicans would do. Mitt Romney said the other day, you know, hey, I was so-so on this Trump guy, but he's off to a strong start. Why did he say that? Because he was looking at Trump's picks. A guy like that loves Betsy DeVos for education secretary, a Christian fundamentalist, a religious lunatic who's an oligarch who bought her position and wants to privatize the public schools. That's exactly what Mitt Romney wants. He looks at Jeff Sessions for attorney general. He goes, great, far-right crazy person who thinks marijuana is evil. Wonderful. I love that. I would make a similar pick. This is how Mitt Romney thinks. This is how all these people think. So you know they're going to turn around and genuflect at the altar of power, and especially when Trump start doing all the crazy shit that they said they want to do, and you know they want to do, now they all like him. So Trump campaigned in a more populist direction, but he's governing as an establishment Republican because he's the bitch of the elite. Never forget it. Okay. All right, let me take a break. And then when we come back, President Trump decided to pull out of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So let's talk about that, and we have an awesome proposal on that front, and much more. Stay right there, everybody. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, renegade left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, renegade left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Girl, please protect me if this shit go left. Cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self. In the kitchen, water whipping with the left.
We back, bitch.
I don't know women, but I know who got the milk.
Wow.
I feel
okay.
Like I'm a woman being
here we go.
Milk. Cause I can lock a trap down by myself.
Big story from, I think this happened Friday. But we gonna talk about it now. So President Trump decided to pull out of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Naturally, he needs a safe space because he'd be triggered by the various microaggressions in the jokes that he would be the butt of. So here's what he said on Twitter. I will not be attending the White House Correspondents' Association dinner this year. Please wish everyone well and have a great evening. My overall take on this is actually a little different. Now, clearly he is doing it because he's a thin-skinned bitch, and, you know, he can't take any criticism. That's not just me saying it. There's been various reports from officials inside the White House who are like, you have to tiptoe around his ego because, yes, it's that fragile. But overall, I actually don't even think this dinner should exist. Now, I know that might be a buzzkill for a lot of people who might like it, but to me, it shows a fundamental systemic problem, which is, how the media and the White House are usually too chummy. And that means that they're all elite, they're all part of the establishment, and oftentimes that means unwittingly they end up doing propaganda for the people in power. Because, it's my buddy, you know, I was at the dinner and he was nice to me, he shook my hand, he kissed my wife on the cheek, he was a good guy, he was a good president, what am I going to do? You know, am I going to really harshly and strongly call out the bad actions that they take where civilians are killed overseas or they deregulate the banks or whatever? So they're too chummy. I want an adversarial relationship between the press and the White House, or just the press and the government in general. But either way, this is an opportunity now to really give it to Donald Trump. And there's this guy, his name's Anthony Adamaniuk, and he is by far and away the best Trump impersonator. Don't even say a goddamn thing about Alec Baldwin in my presence, because I actually think his impersonation is not that good. I mean, the makeup is good, and they make him look like him, but it's over the top, and it's not, he doesn't have Trump's mannerisms down, and I really don't even like Alec Baldwin's impersonation, to be honest. But now, Anthony Adamaniuk, on the other hand, oh my God, does he do the best Trump impersonation. It's not even close. It's amazing. There are nights where I watched him impersonating Trump for hours on end because I couldn't get enough and I couldn't stop laughing. So what we're trying to do, along with many other people who've had the same idea, is we're trying to get him to fill in for Trump. So you go about the correspondence dinner as if Trump is there, and Anthony Adamaniuk plays the Trump role. And I want to give you a taste of some of his work here, and then we'll come back and I'll let you know how we're going to get this done.
I mean, Bernie has his own ice cream flavor. Why shouldn't I have my own ice cream flavor? It's unbelievable. I would have tremendous ice cream, Doug. The best ice cream, the creamiest ice cream. Frank, I need to win this thing tonight.
You've got to go after that Jew!
That Jew communist. He's a Jew communist.
That Jew communist socialist. That Jew communist socialist Sandinista.
That Jew communist socialist Sandinista. That Jew communist socialist Sandinista. Guzzler. I want your supporters, Bernie. Please, give them to me.
Not going to happen.
Okay, let me tell you something right now. I appeal to old Jews and young hipster Jews in unbelievable ways. I want them all. I want the young Jews, the big Jews, the small Jews, the bad Jews.
I want every kind of Jew, and I want to choose the Jew. It's choose your own Jew menu, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I have Trump steaks, I have Trump wine, I have Trump drums, I have Trump everything. Hi, how are you? Donald Trump, I'd shake your hand, but you look very poor.
We had Lying Ted. I have a new one for Ted, Special Ted. I think that's really funny, too. He's a little bit of a retard. And like that Stephen Hawking, that, oh, that guy, you know what I mean? And this guy is so slick. He's like a bottle of Astroglide that's like on its side. Very greasy, very greasy. I mean, Ted Cruz is like a fetus that raised itself in a dumpster feral, you know? That's what it looks like. And we're going to have to deal with China. I have the same policy on women as I do the Chinese, which is that China is our enemy.
You want to go hit a rub-a-tug in Koreatown?
Well,
yeah? Good. There we go. How are you, Donald Trump?
Oh,
I'll take you both home right now.
Yes! That's the Don I know. I want you to go for his balls. Can you?
Of course I will. I mean, I don't...
Balls!
I'll grab his balls. I think they hang down by his knees.
Of course they do.
This guy has been cutting my hair for over 30 years. Never misses a step.
Since I was in third grade.
That's right. I hired him as a very young boy. I purchased him from his father. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, Vladimir Putin, bald guy, very threatened by great hair.
Well, it just is important to look like a large mallard duck is sitting on his head with the duck butt in the back that just shoots out... Little brain duties.
That's right. And these brain duties are very important.
Yes.
They're going to be what runs this country.
Yeah, look, no, we're not. This isn't a question. This isn't a thing. We're going to mobilize. I want everybody listening to this right now, I want your help. It doesn't take long. It'll be very quick, but we got to get this guy there, man. So the White House Correspondents' Dinner's Twitter is at WHCA. At WHCA. And I need you to tweet at them and tell them, look, pick Anthony Adamaniewicz to go to the dinner. It's not a question. You have to do it. He blows Alec Baldwin out of the water. Every other Trump impersonator. You know, I saw an article that said there's a different impersonator, not Alec Baldwin, not Anthony Adamaniewicz, that is the highest paid. I looked at the guy's impression. I'm like, what the fuck are people thinking? This guy is terrible. Meanwhile, Anthony Adamaniewicz, I mean, look, his work speaks for itself. You don't need me to say it again here. But so what I'll do is on the screen right now on YouTube, you'll see at WHCA, you'll see Anthony Adamaniewicz's Twitter. Give him a follow, but tweet at WHCA and tell them, look, you know, Anthony Adamaniewicz, pick him. I would love to see this guy roast Trump as Trump there. And, oh, my God, think about how much that would get under Donald Trump's skin. It would be amazing. It would be the best thing ever. It would be amazing to see Trump tweeting about how this guy's impersonating him, doing a fantastic job, and he'll be like, sad. This is nothing like me. I don't know who he's trying to impersonate here, but I'm tremendous. Believe me. Let me just tell you. I have to just tell you. So let's get this done, guys. Get on Twitter. Get at it. Get to it, because I want this to not even be a question. I want the White House correspondence people to be like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it, and let's do it right now. Okay. Next. This guy's fucking great, man. I swear. His videos are amazing. All right. Now, let's go to the Washington Post and the Republicans and... what they're doing to crack down on free speech. Okay, here we go. The Washington Post is reporting on a bunch of Republican states who are cracking down on the First Amendment. And they're doing that by passing anti-protest laws. So let's take a look at this graphic here, and this will show you the states that it's happening in. In at least 18 red states, it's happening. And here's the most terrifying example of these anti-protest laws. They explain, an Arizona bill introduced this week would open up protests to anti-racketeering legislation, targeting protesters with the same laws used to combat organized crime syndicates.
It would also allow police to seize the assets of anyone involved in a protest that at some point becomes violent. It recently passed the state Senate on a party line vote and is now before the House. So make no mistake about it, this is a backdoor way to try to ban protests, because what they're doing is saying, well, sure, you have the right to protest, you can protest, but if you get hit with racketeering charges, it is what it is. What are you going to do here? And the scariest part to me is if you're involved in a protest where at any time as part of the protest somebody does property damage, for example, even if you are in the protest and not being violent, they could just seize your assets and proclaim, nope, you're being violent. What? Even if you, vocally speak out against somebody doing violence as part of a protest, they say, since you were part of the protest, we're going to go ahead and just say you are violent by definition, and we're going to seize your assets. Guys, that is just mental. I mean, what we're talking about there is tyranny. What we're talking about is authoritarianism. And here's the angle of the story that gets under my skin more than anything else. There's this recent movement that has emerged that is filled with mostly right-wingers who pretend, like, oh my God, all we care about is free speech, that's our whole thing. And they use examples of Milo Yiannopoulos going to speak on college campuses and then, liberal students protesting because they don't want him there. Now, look, I despise Milo Yiannopoulos with a burning passion, but as I've said repeatedly, I would let him speak at the college campuses. I know I despise the guy, and I know he's an idiot because I listen to him speak. I would let Ben Shapiro speak. I let Steven Crowder speak. I disagree with these guys on virtually everything, but I let him speak. So they're actually right, I think, that, conservatives and people with various viewpoints should be able to speak on these college campuses. But here's the thing that drives me crazy. They never, ever, ever bring up instances where Republicans crack down on free speech and say, you know what, look, I got to be consistent, I got to not be a partisan hack here, and I have to come out in favor of free speech when it's a crackdown from the right. They don't do that. You want to know why? Because they actually don't care about free speech when the crackdown is from the right. When the crackdown is from the right, they go, yeah, what's the problem? So in this case, they're talking about protests that happened as a result of Donald Trump winning, and of course we had the Women's March, and there were people who were, standing up and speaking out across the country. So when it's anti-Trump protests, anti-right-wing policies protests, then they go, yeah, hear no evil, see no evil. I don't agree with the substance of the protest, so go ahead, take any legal method you want, anyone, to crack down on these protesters. Violate the First Amendment, who cares about the Constitution? And again, it's not even just with this. It's with a bunch of other things, too. So there was a pro-BDS Palestinian speaker invited to a college campus to give a talk recently. He was not only disinvited because some students were offended, but also the two professors who invited him had action taken against them. I don't know whether they were suspended with pay or suspended without pay or if they were fired or whatever it was. But he was disinvited, and the people who invited him, there was a crackdown on them. What happened? Where are all the right-wingers who come out and say, look, I may not even agree with BDS. I don't agree with a pro-Palestine movement because I'm massively pro-Israel. That's what these right-wingers could say. But hey, you know what? Let them speak. I'm in favor of freedom of speech. Of course, Anna Kasparian from TYT. Whether you agree or disagree with her is irrelevant. She was invited to speak at a college campus and then disinvited when right-wingers on the board who made the decision said, I'm offended by her thoughts on Trump and female voters. So right-wingers, where are you? Again, you're the ones who claim. When it's Milo and when it's a right-winger, look, it doesn't even matter if you're offended by it. It doesn't matter. You let people speak because this is the free marketplace of ideas. So where are you to argue for her? You're nowhere to be fucking found because you don't actually care about the principle of it. Look, I'll put my record on this front up against anybody because you can find the segments. I've done the segments where I come out here as a progressive and I say, let Milo speak. Let him speak. And I also come out here and do the segments when there's a crackdown on the left, when the left is censored. You're not going to find any of these right-wingers who say they're free speech warriors and absolutists. You're not going to find their segments defending the people who are saying things that they disagree with. you're simply not going to find it. So this gets under my skin like nothing else. And furthermore, their fucking president, who they love so much, the president who Milo Yiannopoulos himself calls Daddy, Daddy Trump, he sued Bill Maher over a joke. What happened to your, oh, he's against social justice warriors and, you know, he's against political correctness. He is a right-wing social justice warrior. He's a right-wing snowflake. He believes in right-wing political correctness. So Maher mocked him a little too hard and compared him to a monkey, and oh, now he sued. He threatened to sue. He wrote a letter to The Onion over a satire piece that they wrote about him. He says we should, quote, open up the libel laws. He wants U.S. free speech laws to mirror free speech laws in the U.K. By the way, in the U.K., they're much stricter. You don't have nearly as much free speech. You can sue the media when, like, and this is what Trump said, let's open up the libel laws to sue the media for when they write articles against him. I mean, for fuck's sake, man, this is a guy who's profoundly against free speech, and yet he's been embraced like he's for it, because when he rails against, like, college kids who are too politically correct on the left, people go, oh, yeah, that's what he stands for. But look in the fucking mirror, you pricks. I'm tired of the hypocrisy of people who only care about something when it's for their own partisan gain. You know, if you're on, I'm on the red team, the right-wing team, so therefore when we crack down on free speech, and vice versa. For the liberals who say, oh, we care about free speech, and then when there's a right-wing commentator who people are protesting against, they go, yeah, no, you should ban him. Fuck all of you. I think you're all ridiculous people because you don't know how to stick to a principle over partisanship. You don't know how to stick to a principle over politicians. So that's what adults do. But right now, as you can see, where is the legal threat to free speech coming from? I just told you, in 18 states, Republican states, they are cracking down on your right to protest because they don't like the substance and the content of the protests, so just try to ban them. Try to ban them without saying, hey, we are banning protests. Say, oh, look, now it's part of racketeering charges. Oh, look, if somebody is violent in the movement, you're all violent. There was another example recently where at Standing Rock, if you were protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline, they wanted to decriminalize accidents of people driving on the road who might happen to run over a protester or two. This is an insane crackdown on free speech. Donald Trump, we're going to get to the story in just a second and bring up a lot of the same points here, but Donald Trump just banned CNN and Politico and the New York Times and the LA Times from the White House press briefing. Where are all the First Amendment crusaders? Yeah, I am going to ban the press outlets that I don't like. Sad. I'm going to ban them. They shouldn't even be able to ask me questions because they dissent from me. Sad. And look, understand, am I defending all the coverage they've ever done of Trump? No. I told you, when they did the hooker gate, where, oh, yeah, Russian hookers like to piss on Trump or something, and Vladimir Putin has it on tape. I said, that's a stupid story. You shouldn't have ran with it. It's not verified. And Trump was right to call that fake news because it is fake news. But fighting back against a shitty story that's incorrect is one thing. On that front, I gave Trump credit. I give Obama credit when he went after Fox News for running shitty stories like the terrorist fish jab and fucking death panels in Obamacare. Fighting back is fine. To say, I am going to ban you from the White House press briefings is not fine. That's a way to try to create a conservative safe space to get away with anything and have softball questions pitched right down the center of the fucking plate every time. He's done this with every world leader when he's had a meeting, whether it was the Canadian Prime Minister or Theresa May from the UK. He picked on only conservative outlets. The one out of like eight different outlets he picked on was not conservative. It was Reuters. Every other one, Fox News, Daily Caller, Breitbart, you know, in the White House press briefings, Sean Spicer is taking Skype calls from fucking right-wing radio shows that have 18 listeners in the middle of the country. They're trying to create a safe space to escape from dissent, and all the so-called free speech warriors got dick to say about it. If anything, they're for it because they're giant fucking hypocrites. If Obama banned Fox News from the White House press briefings, there would have been an outcry like you've never seen before, and people would have been calling for impeachment. They would have said, this is the clearest thing against the First Amendment I've ever seen. But no, Obama and the Democrats, what do they do? Obama gave Bill frickin' O'Reilly the pre-Super Bowl interview in, I think it was 2014. Are you kidding me? So Hillary Clinton, during the election, went on Fox News and spoke to Bill O'Reilly. I'm not sure if she went on or she literally called in, but I think it was after a terror attack, a Muslim terror attack, and she went on to say, oh, yes, yes, no, we've got to be strong on Islamic terror. And so this is what happens. The game is rigged. Whenever the Democrats are in power, they're, oh, yes, I will be deferential to the right-wing outlets and treat them as totally legitimate. And vice versa, when it's a Republican in there, he's fucking kicking them out. It's not even like he's just not giving them an interview. I don't expect Donald Trump to sit down with Chris Hayes. He can't fucking handle it because he's a snowflake. But when you kick out the dissenting media outlets, no, no, now you went too far. And again, the people who pretend to believe in the First Amendment the most, no, don't say anything. And then they justify it. They rationalize, fake news, it's fake news, you should kick him out. Fucking Fox News did nothing but fake news about Obama all the time, all the time. And again, if he had kicked them out, you would have said, what are you doing? That's crazy. That's against the First Amendment. So it's all about the partisan horseshit for you. Understand that you're a hack. I just want you to know that you're a hack. If you say you care about First Amendment issues, but then you're silent on all the crackdowns from the right. So spare me your fucking crocodile tears the next time there's a conservative talker from a campus who gets protests or who gets disinvited as a result of it. I don't want to fucking hear it from you. I don't want to hear it. Because, again, it's all about the partisan angle of it. Now, I will be doing those segments where I say, let the conservative speaker talk, but that's because I earned it because I'm consistent on it. You, on the other hand, are not. I think I forgot to print that other story. Okay. Well, I just kind of did it in that. I should take a poll on this. Should I do that story either way? We'll see. I told you, the theme of today is right-wing political correctness. All right, let me do a little switching around of our stories because I left one out, obviously. Okay. All right, let's keep going. I got some stuff from CPAC from last week that I wanted to get to, but I didn't have the time to get to. So we're going to do it now, bitch. The Conservative Political Action Conference is going on this week. Was it this week or I think it was just last week? All right, let me try that again. The Conservative Political Action Conference went on last week, and it's basically a conference of absolute lunatics. So here we have a so-called expert on Islam. Her name is Claire Lopez, and she's from the Center for Security Policy, which sounds super legit, right? Well, let's go ahead and see what you had to say.
The Center for Security Policy has produced two reports about the incidence of Sharia in U.S. courts already. Faith communities, interfaith dialogue, where the bridge only goes one way, towards Islam. Our government and national security, which are so deeply penetrated by the Muslim Brotherhood. Local law enforcement, and this is a really important one. The Muslim Brotherhood and some of its front groups are actually training our local police and sheriff's departments. And some of those police and sheriff's departments are turning around and training local Muslim Brotherhood front groups. How's that going to work out? Media, society in general, the workplace, all of these I consider, I would call these the pillars of support of American society. These are how the Muslim Brotherhood insinuates Sharia gradually, stealthily into our society.
Yeah, that is fucking crazy what she's saying. I mean, in all seriousness, this reminds me of the old propaganda about the Jews. Oh, the Jews, they run everything. They secretly run the world, and they run all the banks. And what happens is there's a global conspiracy where they're screwing you over, and we need to rise up and fight back against the Jews. That's what all that sounded like. Okay, Sharia is now in U.S. courts. No, it's not. No, it's not. So we have, of course, the First Amendment in the U.S., and as part of the Constitution, we have secularism. So the government cannot impose religious law on anybody. The government has to be neutral on issues of religion. It can't, do an undue burden against religion, but it also you also can't have religion put into the state and enforced on other people. So this idea, right, yeah, we've set up Sharia courts in Nebraska. That's what's happening. What fucking, like, how do you think you can get away with saying shit like this? But they do, and in the room with the people they're talking to, they really believe it. Understand, Muslims are less than 1% of the society in the U.S. Even if there was some sort of gigantic effort to take over, and that's what we're going to do, they're going to be able to do it? They're going to succeed in doing it? No. And furthermore, when you actually look at the polling data for American Muslims, you'll find that more American Muslims believe in gay marriage, for example, than white evangelical Christians. So the American Muslim community is significantly less theocratic than the white evangelical community. There's your real threat for Sharia in the United States, Christian Sharia. Over 70% of the U.S. public is Christian. There's, what, 25% are ultra-right-wing Christian evangelical and really would like to impose their religion on the state, and they try to do that when it comes to abortion and when it comes to gay marriage and various other issues. But she's up there ranting against Muslims and Sharia like that's a threat in fucking West Virginia? What kind of bullshit? I mean, you want to talk about drinking the Kool-Aid and chugging it. I'm scared of Muslims. Oh, my God, the Muslims are going to take over in the U.S. I'm so scared. Then she says the government is penetrated by the Muslim Brotherhood. This is in allusion to Obama when they said Huma Abedin is a secret Muslim Brotherhood agent. They've probably said the same thing about Keith Ellison, who's part of the fucking Progressive Caucus, and he's a Muslim. See, that's all they see. Muslim, that's it. That's his whole identity. Everything is tied to that, and we're going to take our worst possible interpretation of that and project it onto him. Even though this is a guy who's fought for the people way more than any of these crazies at CPAC have. And again, at CPAC, you're talking to more people in the audience who believe in theocracy than if you were talking to the Muslim community. And you're acting like the Islamic theocracy, a.k.a. Sharia, is taking over. And then my favorite is the Muslim Brotherhood are taking over the police. Okay, we have problems when it comes to police in the U.S., do we not? I mean, we have, they're certainly hyper-militarized. They have a lot of weapons that are used during wartime. You know, we don't have community oversight and civilian review boards. We don't have de-escalation training as, you know, stress on that so that we stop killing innocent people. We have the drug war, which means that the police are basically an occupying army in many respects, in many cities across the country. So we have a lot of problems there. But what she does is makes up a problem. The Muslim Brotherhood has taken over, right, yeah. The Muslim Brotherhood has taken over police in America. I'd love for somebody, get me the stats, guys. I'd love for somebody, what percentage of police are even Muslim? Again, if it's less than 1% of the population, it's probably less than 1% police departments, too. This is a sick, it's a sick joke, man. And this stuff, we're making fun of it, and we mock it, but it is dangerous. Because there are people out there who are unhinged, who already believe all the Muslims done take over. And then what happens? There was a story just the other day. A guy, I think he walked into a bar, and there were two Indian men sitting there, and he just killed one of them. Shot at the other one, killed one Indian guy. Then he went to a different place. He went to an Applebee's nearby, and he told the bartender, I just took out a Middle Easterner. So obviously Indian is South Asian, but he just looked at him, oh, he's got dark skin, he's brown, I'm going to kill him. And he killed him. And, you know, just obvious hate crime, obviously thought, oh, man, this might be one of them Sharia sons and bitches. Let me kill him. I mean, the irony is overwhelming. You're talking to a room full of people who, by and large, cheered on the Iraq War and the War on Terror, and they love George W. Bush's hawkish policies. And now they go up there and they feign concern about a non-existent Sharia takeover in the U.S. and violent Muslims. Look in the fucking mirror. More of you guys support theocracy than American Muslims, and more of you support violence because you were cheering on the Iraq War, and virtually everybody in that room is for the death penalty. So, yeah, oh, yeah, no, we're pro-life, and by that I mean, like, let's kill people. Yeah. So you're all idiots. I'm done with your propaganda and your bullshit, and pump your brakes because this kind of rhetoric is dangerous apart from being just totally wantonly untrue. All right, let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to get to Representative Louis
Gohmert. And Louis Gohmert's going to talk to us about Louis Gohmert-like things. I'm Louis Gohmert.
All right, we're going to talk about some shit that he did. And Ken Ham has a message for atheists. So believe me, we'll be laughing when we come back. Stay right there.
Street.
Used the most ironic defense of all time for why he's dodging his constituents and missing town halls. He said this: "Unfortunately, at this time, there are groups from the more violent strains of the leftist ideology, some even being paid, who are preying on public town halls to wreak havoc and threaten public safety. Threats are nothing new to me, and I have gotten my share as a felony judge. However, the House Sergeant-at-Arms advised us after former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords was shot at a public appearance that civilian attendees at congressional public events stand the most chance of being harmed or killed, just as happened there." So he's saying, look, I'm not going to go to town halls because it's not safe. Okay, what? The Republican Party is so incredibly pro-gun that they just recently slapped down an Obama-era rule that said people who have mental illness that's so severe that they need to have a legal guardian or somebody appointed to take care of their money for them, they just slapped down a rule that said those people can't have guns. They were like, no, if you're too severely mentally ill to handle your money, you still should be able to have your gun. They just slapped that down. They're in favor. They've never, even Mitch McConnell under Obama, when we had the Sandy Hook massacre, we eventually whittled our way all the way down to, all right, let's just do a watered down background check bill to address this crisis. So Mitch McConnell filibustered it, and the Republicans bragged about, you know, how they were against a policy that over 90% of the American people favored. They bragged about being against 92% of the American people. They are not even in favor of more background checks for gun purchases. And now Louie Gohmert's going out there like, look, man, I wouldn't go to town halls, but I'm dangerous. There's a lot of guns out there, bro. What? You can't just – you just supported a measure that allows severely mentally ill people to get guns. And now you go, well, I can't go to town halls. Severely mentally ill people have guns. Oh, my God, man. By the way, this is your fucking job, dude. This is your job. You're not like, okay, if you're a Hollywood star and you're in big-time action movies or some shit, they're under no obligation. Oh, you know, you have to go hang out in a room with all your fans and answer questions and stuff. That's not part of the fucking job description. You're a politician, Louie. You're a congressman. This is your job. And he feigns like, oh, it's not about me. It's about the other civilian attendees who might get shot or something by a crazy person. Anyway, where's the next bill where I can vote for more guns in circulation? And then furthermore, look, he's really doing it. Everybody knows why he's really doing it. He wants to dodge tough questions. So yet again, this is an example of a Republican searching for their safe space. Where are the free speech warriors out there ranting and railing against all these Republican politicians who are dodging tough questions? It's happened with so many of them. In fact, people are either not doing them, or in many instances, they're having teletown halls where at the last minute they change it to, no, we're going to do Skype town halls. Now, why are they doing that? Because if you do Skype town halls, there's actually, they set it up so that there's vetting, so the staff can determine whether or not it's going to be a softball question or not, and then if it is, okay, we're going to let you ask the question. If it's a tough question, nope, we're not going to let you ask the question. So this, I mean, come on, son, come on. This is ridiculous. I mean, this really gets under my skin that the Republicans can dodge accountability and dodge their constituents, and nobody says, why are you running to your safe space? They can make arguments like, It's dangerous out there, man. Look what happened to Gabby Giffords. And then also turn around and vote for every single measure that would increase the threat. And they want gun anarchy, not even mild basic regulations. So this really gets under my skin. And, of course, very few people are talking about it because it's almost like the bar is so low for Republicans in many instances that stuff like this doesn't even register, even though it should. All right, next, Ken Ham. Ken Ham is a famous Christian fundamentalist, and he decided to release a statement explaining why atheists don't want creationism taught in public schools. This ought to be good. So here's what he said. Christians are happy to teach children regarding various views of origins, but atheists want children taught naturalism to the exclusion of all others. Atheists are so insecure, they don't want anyone seeing nativity scenes, crosses, etc., as they don't want people to think for themselves. My children know more about evolution than most evolutionists. We're not afraid to teach them about how to understand different views. Atheists are afraid to let people be taught to think critically about origins, as people would then understand evolution's a religion. They can't have their belief critically analyzed, so they legislate to protect it in public schools. So do you see what he's doing there? This is a bastardization of the idea of, ooh, just allowing different viewpoints. Why are you being so intolerant of my viewpoint? I don't understand what you're talking about. Free speech. I mean, look, this is what it is. This is how we should do it. Really? So I'll prove to these people right now that they don't even believe what they're saying. Let's go ahead and teach in our public schools what Islam teaches about origins of the universe. Should we do that? Should we teach what Scientology views as origins, or Mormonism, or Hinduism, or any of the over 3,000 religions that are in existence today? Should we make time for that? In, by the way, science class, because that's what we're talking about. Where do they teach evolution? Science class. What's he doing? He's saying, look, you got to teach both sides. I mean, look, we just want an open, free exchange of ideas. So in science class, you have to bring up creationism. Now, here's the problem with that logic. It's not science. End of discussion. That's it. That's as far as the analysis goes. He makes it seem like, oh, you're just insecure. That's why you don't want it in. No, we don't want propaganda and indoctrination of bullshit ideas. That's why we don't teach, you know, Hinduism as fact in science class. That's why we don't teach the stork theory of where babies come from in science class versus, you know, reproduction and birth. It's so transparent. And by the way, if he had his way, make no mistake about it, he wouldn't even teach both in class. He would only teach creationism because that's all he's interested in, man. All he's interested in is pushing his Christian fundamentalism to the exclusion of all other ideas. And since, obviously, he's losing massively right now because, you know, in most states, of course they teach evolution, and if anything, in a few states, there's stealth intelligent design led in there, not even creationism, but the watered-down version of intelligent design. He's losing. So instead of just coming out and telling you what he wants, a Christian theocracy where all you teach is creationism, he's like, okay, well, we got to slowly get in there and infiltrate. And how do you do your infiltration? At first, you pretend, I just want all ideas taught. And then eventually, if they were to get that, then it would become, well, you know, this evolution thing, we probably shouldn't teach that at all. So it's almost like he's doing creeping Christian Sharia. That's exactly what it is. So Ken Ham, ridiculous human being. And it's crazy how, like, we're still having conversations and debates on issues that have been settled for so long. Like, this isn't a thing. Other modern nations don't, you know, have school board meetings where they discuss, hey, maybe we do let in creationism or intelligent design. I just want to teach all sides. Just teach all sides of the debate. But that's what we call a neutrality bias. Neutrality bias means you're always willing to call it 50-50 even when we have the answers. It's why we get mad at CNN when they have a debate where you have, hey, here's a scientist who says climate change is happening, and here's a Republican congresswoman who says, no, it's not happening. There is no climate change. Why are you having that debate? You're CNN. What you should do is report what the scientist is saying because they're the expert in that field and report it as if it's true because it is. But no. So it's the false equivalence all day long. It's the neutrality bias. Oh, you've got to hear everybody out even if it's been proven that they're wrong. And look, again, people who even say they believe in that principle don't believe in that principle, and it's easy to bust that up. Just go up and ask one of them, okay, so should we teach both sides of the Holocaust? I mean, sure, look, yeah, a lot of Jews were killed and a lot of people were killed, millions of people were killed. But, hey, on the other hand, here's Hitler's point of view. Here's where he was coming from. And we'll leave it up to you, 50-50. He says, hey, we were victims and there was the Versailles Treaty and, you know, the goddamn Jew bankers ran everything and they're evil and they're subhuman. And so here, let's teach both sides as if it's equal legitimacy. No, one side is right, one side is wrong. That's how you fucking teach it. You give all the facts, but all the facts would point in the direction of one side being victimized and correct and the other side being evil and wrong. By the same token, one side is correct and has all the facts, evolution, the other one is made up religious garbage and horseshit. And if you allow creationism into public schools, you have to allow what any motherfucker says, I think this is how everything started. You know, I think the earth started when a wizard waved a magic wand and farted and said a poem in Swahili and then clicked his heels together twice and then boom, everything came into existence. Well, why not teach that? It's got the same amount of evidence as fucking creationism, which this guy's talking about. So, utter nonsense. Ken Ham, you're a silly person. Step aside. All right, next. Let's go to Pope Francis. Pope Francis made some comments on Thursday that got some headlines. So I want to tell you what he said here and also break down the way the headlines portrayed it. So he said, it is a scandal to say one thing and do another. That is a double life. There are those who say, I am very Catholic. I always go to Mass. I belong to this and that association. Some of these people should also say, my life is not Christian. I don't pay my employees proper salaries. I exploit people. I do dirty business. I launder money. I lead a double life. There are many Catholics who are like this, and they cause scandal. How many times have we all heard people say, if that person is a Catholic, it is better to be an atheist? So the headlines on this were all portraying it as another liberal thing that Pope Francis argued. You know, Pope Francis says it's better to be an atheist than a bad Christian. That's what a lot of the headlines read. So some people tweeted at me, hey, what do you think of this? And I saw just the headline. I was like, oh, cool. So later on, when I actually read the article and went through it, I went, actually, no, not at all. Because look at how he phrased this. He's saying, all these Catholics, they're hypocrites. They say they live a good life. They don't pay a living wage, yada, yada, yada. And then he goes, there are many Catholics who are like this, and they cause scandal. How many times have we all heard people say, if that person is a Catholic, it's better to be an atheist? So he ain't framing it as a positive thing for atheists. He's saying, well, atheists are obviously low-life scum, and if you're going to act like low-life scum, just admit it and say, I'm an atheist. I'm low-life scum. It's better to be an atheist. It's better to admit you're low-life scum than to say you're a good person, a good Christian, and not act like a good Christian. That's the argument he's making. And if you read it and you switch out, and if you try to put in a different group, you'll see how condescending and bad it really is. And you'll see how every single headline about this praising him like he said something liberal is misleading. So imagine he said, if that person is a Catholic, it's better to be a Jew. Oh. You would be like, wait, what? Why are you saying that, man? That comes across as, like, fucked up towards Jews, doesn't it? If that person is a white person, I mean, it's better to be black. Oh, no, stop it. Oh, what are you saying? Stop it. But that's exactly what he's saying about atheists. And the bar is so low for treating atheists like normal human beings that even a disparaging comment towards them is portrayed as like, oh, look how liberal he is. He just mentioned atheists. Look, man, here's the reality of it, and you're not going to hear this anywhere else. If you look at polling data of atheists, atheists actually more believe in and embody the New Testament philosophy of Jesus. So now, obviously, there are parts where Jesus deviates and he's violent and I come with the sword and yada yada. But the bulk of his message was the lovey-dovey hippie guy, right? The loving person. Atheists are more in favor of an open-minded, liberal message where you take care of the poor and you don't do wars. They more believe in that mindset and that philosophy than Christians do. So they don't believe in your magical wizard in space, but they do believe in treating people right and well according to the polls. And again, he frames it like, well, obviously atheists are at the, you know, the bottom of the moral order, so why not just be one of those if you're going to be a bad Christian? Dude, we're not at the bottom of the moral order, and you're just, they're, it's so dismissive. By the way, there are polls that say that, you know, parents don't want their kid to marry an atheist. Like, we are really just looked down upon in society. A lot of people think when you say, I'm an atheist, again, polls show this, like, atheism equals immorality. So when you say, I'm an atheist, a lot of people hear, I don't believe in right and wrong, I don't believe in ethics, I don't believe in moral values, I'm like a nihilist who is okay with people suffering or something. And again, the exact opposite is true according to the polling data, where we're actually more atheists are in favor of a living wage than if you poll the Christian community, more atheists are in favor of ending stupid wars, and you name it. So there's this real passive, nonchalant bigotry against atheists, when it's not just outright. I mean, we discussed a story a while ago. There were actually considerations during the civil rights debate, and when they passed the Civil Rights Act, where they were considering, hey, maybe we should put atheists in here among protected classes, along with, you know, religion and race and the other things that are protected classes. So they discussed it, and everybody decided, no, don't put atheists in there. They shouldn't be protected. There are, what, 11 states, I think it is, where it's on the state law books that atheists can run for office? Now, that's unconstitutional, so they can run for office, but it's still, the language is still on the state law books. So think about that if it said Jews can't run for office in Mississippi or something, if it still said that on the law books, we would fucking go nuts and remove it today. But when it's atheist, nobody cares. If it said blacks can't run for office still on the law books in Alabama, we got to change that. Well, that's fucking crazy. How can you still have that there even if it's unconstitutional and that's not how we're acting? You have to change the language. With atheists, nobody gives a fuck. So, no, I'm not giving him credit for this. In fact, if anything, I'm more angry at him as a result of this because this is how he views atheists. If you're going to be a bad Christian, if you're going to be a bad person and say you're Christian, just be an atheist. That's like admitting you're a bad person. Fuck off, Padre. How about that? Okay. Probably just one more story here for you because I'm running out of time. Journalist Ron Jakalik was supposed to give a speech on Palestine at UNC this week, but she was disinvited. So UNC Students for Justice in Palestine posted this statement after this happened. They said, after receiving much feedback and after careful consideration, we have decided to cancel tomorrow's event with Rania. We do not endorse nor reject her views on the Syrian civil war, as they remain relatively unclear according to our members' diverse opinions on Rania's analyses. Although Rania was not going to speak about Syria, we understand the Syrian conflict is a contentious issue, and the invitation was met with a lot of anger. We appreciate the concerns of those who have reached out to us, especially our Syrian supporters, and believe her invitation would mistakenly imply Students for Justice in Palestine to hold such views. SJP supports liberation movements for all oppressed people and recognizes their rights to self-determination. Okay, so she's invited to talk about Palestine. There are a bunch of students who you know, find her views on Syria objectionable. So they cry and they scream and they bitch and they moan and they get her disinvited over her views on a totally unrelated topic. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's like me being invited to give a talk on corruption in our government and the solutions, or me being invited to give a talk on Justice Democrats. And then they go, you know, Kyle, we heard that you're in favor of legalizing drugs, so we're going to disinvite you. Or we heard that you think gambling should be legal or prostitution should be legal. We're going to disinvite you because we disagree with that. So this is the kind of society we're going to have. This is the kind of system we're going to set up. Anybody who's ever said anything that other people find offensive, you're going to be banned if somebody objects. Well, people find anything and everything offensive. And what one person finds offensive is what another person says calls brave truth-telling. So I find, for example, fundamentalist religious views offensive. Should I ban anybody and everybody who wants to give a talk on a college campus who holds religious views? Most people are religious. So it's nonsense. And this is where the idea comes from of, oh, look at these liberals, these snowflakes, these social justice warriors. You need your safe space from your microaggression that you felt, were you triggered? And you're fucking proving the stereotype true. It's utterly ridiculous. And furthermore, let's keep it real. Rania's views on Syria are not extreme by any stretch of the imagination. She rightly points out, hey, there's a lot of unsavory rebels fighting Assad. Like Assad or not, there was a study that found over half the rebels are jihadists and Islamists. They're extremist groups. You know, it was al-Nusra who changed their name because they were an official affiliate of al-Qaeda. For somebody to point that out is somebody pointing out facts, that it disrupts your rebels never did anything wrong narrative and Assad is Hitler. I don't care. I don't give a fuck. I get it. The whole liberal idea is, oh, we always got to be down for the cause and down for the struggle. And by the way, at the end there of the statement here, they kind of let you know. They gave you a little wink and a nod as to where they stand on the Syrian conflict. We support liberation movements for all oppressed people and recognize the right to self-determination. So that's them saying, yeah, we're with the Syrian rebels. We're not with the Syrian government. So therefore, since Rania has criticized the rebels very substantively and critically, we're not gonna let her come speak. Well, that's silly, and it shows you actually can't even engage on that debate. Because when Rania rightly points out that the majority of the Syrian rebels are Islamists and jihadists, and that despite all the terrible flaws of the Syrian government and as bad as Assad is, it's a secular socialist state, you have no rebuttal to that. So what do you do? Just shut her down. Ban her. Don't let her come. It exposes our ignorance on that issue. Even though, by the way, it doesn't, because she's talking about Palestine. She's not talking about Syria. So enough of this garbage. And by the way, where's everybody who says they're a free speech warrior, where are you? Are you going to defend Rania? No, you're not going to defend Rania. The only time there's ever national news about, oh, my God, look, they're protesting a conservative talker. Look how against free speech they are, is when it's a conservative. Because conservatives all rise up and they, you know, they get angry about it, and then it makes news. The media won't pay any attention to this. Liberals won't care, even though what we have in this situation is a secular, Arab, leftist woman who was censored and banned and disinvited and shut down by people who are sympathetic to mostly ultra-conservative rebels, mostly Salafist rebels. So they think they're being liberal. They're not. They're being conservative, and they're being authoritarian, and they're silencing dissenting views. And she wasn't even going to talk about those views. It's about something totally unrelated, but they're so triggered by her stance on another issue that we have to ban the woman. Ban the woman from talking. Can't let the woman talk. Can't let the secular Arab leftist talk. You know, you got to kowtow to the loudest, most obnoxious, most ignorant people in the room who say, I disagree with her on Syria, and I side with the largely extremist rebels, so let's shut her down. What a joke this is. Let her speak. Let her speak. And, you know, if people out there in my audience want to take initiative on this, and I don't know if UNC has a Twitter account, but if they do, tweet at them. I don't know if UNC Students for Justice in Palestine has a Twitter account, but if they do, you tweet at them, or you go to their website and you leave a comment or something, because this is garbage. This is nonsense. This is ridiculous. They disagree with her on something, so they're just going to ban her. No, let's be consistent. Let's actually stand up for free speech across the board here and also recognize the extra layer of absurdity that she isn't even talking about that issue and they banned her. What a joke. Okay. Let's wrap it up, y'all. That's all the time I got. I'm out of time here. All right, love all of you. Come back tomorrow, same time, same place. You know the deal. Mwah. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Peace.